Good morning. We will call the May 19th, 2021 Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meeting to order. We always like to start out our meetings with our flag salute. Lanaya, would you like to lead us this morning, our flag salute, if we could all stand?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, would you call the roll just for the record?
Yes. Director Beckard?
Here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And we have legal counsel in attendance.
Very good. All right. April, do we have any guests this morning that we need to recognize?
We have a special recognition that we will handle the first thing on our agenda, and we also have several vendors representing EMWP in the room.
And Madam Secretary, I understand that you have an announcement to make regarding our phone-in options.
Yes. We have new EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings, and I will go ahead and read them off to you. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute your device during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And last but not least, please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. And then, Madam Secretary, do we have any cards for public comment or wishing anyone to do public comments?
We do not.
Very good. With that, we will move on to item two of our agenda, which is our recognitions. And is Roxanne going to lead us this morning? Good morning, Ms. Roundtree.
Good morning, President Pauly, board members, and staff. This morning, we are joined by Rick Cutter, managing partner with AAC, Sean Matthews, and Alexia Granville with West Valley High School in Hemet, and two staff members that have been involved, Charles Cameroo, our director of customer service, and Eileen Earle, our public affairs specialist. So as you know, over the last year and a half, we have been working with AAC utility partners to lead the implementation of EMWD's new customer information system that will be replacing COINS. Through this partnership, it was identified to Charles that AAC not only strategizes the technical aspects of what we do here at EMWD in terms of our billing, but they also find it very rewarding to contribute to the success of the community where our services are provided. One of the ways they accomplish this is through their sponsored Young Navigators Award program, where they assist a graduating high school student in our service area who is at or near high school graduation and would benefit from the financial support in the furthering of their educational pursuits. This program is accomplished through an essay contest, and the theme for this award submission was Imagine a Career in the Water Utility Industry. So at this time, I'd like to invite up Rick Cutter, managing partner of AAC, to come up and share a few words and announce the winning entry. And then following Rick's announcement, if I could please have Director Record, since the student is from your division, and Board President Pauly, to come down and do a very quick photo, please.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rick Cutter. Thank you for having us here today. AAC Utility Partners is a trusted partner with you folks here at EMWD. We're so happy to have you as our partner. One of the things that we do is a Young Navigator Awards, what we call it, where we engage your local community for young people that are pursuing, you know, college activities in the future. We ask them to write a paper about the utility and their local neighborhood and how things are being progressed in their environment and their progress to college. I'm proud to announce that Miss Alexia Granville wrote a fantastic paper about the role of customer service representatives. She's from Westville High School, and I won't embarrass her and make her read this paper, but I should. It's so good. One comment she made that I really liked was she says, most importantly, I would need to listen attentively to their needs in order to help them in the most effective manner possible. Along with this comes patience and empathy, which are both necessary to help customers feel that their needs are being met. I felt like this young lady really understands the role of a customer service rep and the values of EMWD. So if you'll come on up here, let's do this award.
Got this
big check, literally. And thank you so much, and we look forward to hearing about your progress in school and where you go to school maybe in another year or so.
Thank you.
Now, if you're up,
yes, please. And I'm sorry, Mr. Matthews, for a teacher, if you're...
All right, great. Come on up, welcome.
Director Beckard here.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you again. A wonderful program that we participate in. With that, we will go to item 3 on our agenda, which is our executive reports. And Mr. Mawad, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, both the governor as well as the Senate leadership have released their state budget priorities to address drought preparedness and water ratepayer arrearages in advance of the state budget negotiations. As mentioned during the last board meeting in late April, the Senate budget plan on drought, safe drinking water, water supply reliability, and ratepayer assistance package was released, which included $1 billion in proposed funding to address utility bill arrearages. The governor has also prioritized drought funding and ratepayer arrearages as part of his economic recovery package. Included in the governor's plan, which he released last Friday, is a proposed $1 billion of funding earmarked to address overdue water bills. Having said that, many elements of the existing proposal to address arrearages are still in flux, such as customer eligibility, meaning will the funding be strictly for low-income ratepayers, and specific details on the funding allocation or application process. All the program details released to date serve as a starting point for negotiations in late May and early June in advance of the June 15th deadline to pass a budget and the governor's deadline of June 30th to sign the budget. Staff has been working with our legislative offices to ensure that funding to assist the district with arrearages are included in the final budget and are allocated to the water providers for application to customer accounts. Under the Proposition 218 notice of public hearing, as the board is aware, in April, specifically on April 21st, the board approved the distribution and publication of the Prop 218 Notice of Public Hearing for proposed water, sewer, and recycled water rates. Subsequently, on April 30th, staff mailed out approximately 268,000 notices to our customers' service addresses, consistent with prior practices. This week, we were notified that approximately 7,652, and I do have an updated number from last night's report, notices have been returned to the post office as undeliverable. The returns represent approximately 2.8% of the notices that we sent out. And so staff has been looking at what has transpired, and I think we finally this morning have the reasons why we have those returns. In previous practices, we did not require that any undeliverable mail be returned to us. This year, the envelope was clearly marked as service request or mail service requested addresses, and thus those items were returned to us, where in the past they would have remained in the post office, and I assume they would have been disposed of. So having said that, we are going to continue to reach out to those customers. We are planning to look at issuing notices to their mailing address versus the service address. In addition, we continue to do our public outreach, including a press release that will be issued today relative to the public hearing that will be held on June 16th, as well as email blast to our bill customers and the EMWD subscribers. And those email blasts are scheduled for May 27th as well as June 8th, respectively. I do want to mention that so far, of the 260,000 delivered notices, as of yesterday, we received 8 response letters total. And we will continue to monitor that. As far as items of interest to the board, last fall, we were notified by the City of Temecula that pavement subsidence has occurred within Pechanga Parkway over a district sewer line. Repairs of the pavement were performed by our crews. However, further subsidence of the pavement occurred. So in an attempt to determine the exact cause of the problems, we recently performed a video inspection of the sewer, and it appears that there is substantial damage to the pipeline, including an offset in the sewer of approximately 6 inches. While the offset is substantial, the pipeline appears to be in stable condition. The sewer itself is within a metropolitan easement and adjacent to a 70-inch diameter pipeline serving San Diego County. So to rule out the potential that there's a leak from the metropolitan pipeline, we did conduct a boring, and there is no detection of moisture. It appears there is loose backfill material within the area that we bored, so we believe that contributed to the settlement of the street. So currently our staff is working to put together a bid package to perform the repair. We're going to have to replace approximately a 40-foot section of the sewer. So that project will be advertised shortly, and we will be bringing an item for the board to either approve the construction contract or ratify, depending upon timing. So we're moving ahead with the proposed repairs for that sewer. On the Paris 2 desalter construction progress, I'm pleased to report that last week we achieved an important milestone. Southern California Edison energized the facility and the new electrical service, which entailed significant work. Not only by Edison, but the contractor and district forces, is critical for the project to begin the process of moving into its commissioning, testing, and startup phase. Successful commissioning, as the board is aware, as well as operation and startup of the facility, will enable us to utilize the Metropolitan Local Resource Program funding under the agreement we entered into with Metropolitan. Even though the latest milestone is a significant achievement for the project and an impressive amount of work continues to be performed by the contractor for anticipated project completion later this year, the project has experienced schedule delays and contract changes for a variety of factors, including the COVID pandemic. These project delays and changes have generated and are anticipated to generate additional contractor claims. So in order to make sure the board is fully briefed on those contractual issues, we will be scheduling a detailed briefing with the board in the near future regarding the contract with Kiewit Construction. Finally, under administrative items, we continue with our reopening plans. Currently, Riverside County remains in the orange moderate COVID-19 tier based on state-established criteria. However, as state statistics continue to improve, the governor continues to target June 15th for full reopening of the state. And there is a probability that the state may eliminate the tiered system. So our staff continues to monitor changes to the requirements implemented by the federal, state, and local jurisdictions. As you're all aware, last week the CDC issued new guidelines relative to wearing face coverings for individuals who have received full vaccinations. We continue to monitor and follow CalOSHA safety regulations. At this time, all employees, consultants, and guests are required to practice social distancing and wear face coverings within EMWD facilities. I also wanted to report that we have not had any district staff report as testing positive for COVID-19 since February of this year. Staff who have been on a work-from-home status will continue reporting to the office a minimum of 3 days a week, and managers and supervisors are currently reporting to the office 4 days a week. At the close of the school year in June, this will apply to employees who may have had a modified schedule to accommodate distance learning due to school closures. The current temporary telecommute assignment policy is due to expire end of June. We are continuing to work with the union leadership to consider a permanent telecommute policy. The goal is to finalize an agreed-upon policy in time to provide a smooth transition from the current work-from-home status to a permanent telecommute policy, which can provide a benefit to the employees as long as we're meeting the needs of our customers. Both the main office and operations and maintenance center lobbies will fully reopen as of June 15th. Again, the state's guideline for full reopening of the state. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
I had a question on the subsidence.
Yes.
And pavement sinking. So is there actually a leak?
Not from the Metropolitan Pipeline. When we performed the boring, there was no moisture that we detected. What we have observed through the video inspection of the sewer is that there is a offset, and we need to correct that. So we need to replace a 40-foot section of that sewer. To your question, Dr. Slauson, it appears the subsidence may be a result of loose fill material above the pipeline, which is contributing to the pavement subsidence.
Okay, but if you filled in that asphalt, you repaved it, and it continued to subside, you would think there's some leak or something.
Yes. So far, we haven't seen the moisture to indicate there's a leak. We believe we need to excavate that area, correct the offset. We need to fix the pipe, yeah. And then, of course, put in proper bedding and backfill material.
How deep is the sewer?
It's about 20 feet.
That's a big
and
job.
I could also add that based on the video cameraing that we did of the sewer line, we're not seeing any debris or soils within the pipeline itself, so it doesn't appear to be that that's pulling down the materials above the pipe. It's potentially, it looks like it's the loose fill that we're dealing with. But we have a break that we need to fix, and that break may have even occurred during construction, during the compaction of the material at that time.
All right. I'm just curious. Thank you.
What's construction?
Matt?
I didn't hear the question.
When was it constructed? When was the line put in?
About the year 2000, 2001, just about 20 years old.
I should mention that this break in the sewer appears to be at the terminus of a casing. And it may be that the casing, the rigid casing, may have contributed whenever there's a movement, seismic or otherwise, that may have contributed to the offset. That's speculation, but the break is at the end of a casing. Any other questions from the board on any of the items that I went over this morning? Great. Thank you so much.
Morning, Laura. Do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing today.
President Poli, I have nothing to add.
Mr. Wall?
I have nothing today.
All right. Very good. That will bring us to our consent calendar this morning. Are there any members of the board like to pull an item for further discussion or separate vote? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, thank you. I would like to just ask for a separate vote on items C and D.
Okay, are you going to need a briefing on those or
no.
Just separate vote? Okay. Why don't we do this? I will look for a motion for items A, B, and then E through G on the consent calendar.
That motion.
Okay. Director Second. Armstrong makes the motion. Director Slauson seconds it. Will you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Very good. The vote is 5-0 on those items. Mr. Legal Counsel, can I take items C and D as one vote?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. I will look for a motion on items C and D on our consent calendar.
I'll move those.
Second.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Record. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
No.
And items C and D are approved by a vote of 4-1. Thank you very much. That will bring us to item 5, which is our action calendar. Item A on the action calendar is to adopt a proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District providing for the issuance of the refunding water and wastewater revenue bonds series 2021 A and B and approve the financing documents. And Mr. Adams, good morning. You are going to walk us through this.
Yes. Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. This morning, we are here to discuss the proposed financing plan for the 2021 refunding bonds. Thomas Hayes and myself will plan to tag team this presentation with the goal of keeping it short and lively. In addition to myself and Thomas, we have the rest of the financing team here either in person or remotely and are available for questions at the end. So let me jump into our the agenda. So here's the outline for the presentation today. I plan to give a brief background on the district's debt and the 2021 plan of finance. I'll turn it over to Mr. Hayes to provide an update on the market and the district's utilization of variable rate debt. Then he will provide an overview of the 2018 bonds and the financing plan for the 2021 bonds. And then I will close it by sharing our debt service schedule or projections for the next 30 years, cover the proposed schedule, and then cover the recommendation. So as you know, the district has close to $1 billion in long-term debt with an annual debt service payments of about $59 million. This represents about 15% of the overall district's budget. Just to give magnitude, if we saved just 3 basis points, it would equate to a 1% reduction in our rates for our ratepayers. So this equals about $275,000 a year. So this shows the importance of actively managing our debt portfolio, which has a benefit to both our current and future ratepayers. Recently, Fitch and S&P reaffirmed our AA+ rating, with Fitch providing a positive outlook for the EMWD. As you may recall, the 2021 plan of finance was brought to the board in February. The annual plan is required by our district's comprehensive debt policy. The plan includes prior year's accomplishments, including the upcoming year and the major work efforts. For 2021, the two top priorities surrounded the district's mandatory tender dates on the 2018 variable rate bonds and addressing the LIBOR transition. The team has been working on the financing since January, and I think we have a good strategy planned and to present to you today. At this point, I will ask Thomas to present the proposed strategy.
Thanks, John. Morning, President Pauley, members of the board. As John mentioned, this was communicated in the plan of finance earlier this year. I'm just going to start with a quick market update and then dive into the transaction. As you could see here on this slide, on the left is the AAA MMD since 2000. Tax-exempt rates currently remain low and near historic lows, but going back since 2000, rates have continued to trend downward. There's occasional spikes, the last one being last year during COVID-19, and what the market experienced was people taking money out of AAA, you know, high-rated securities and putting them in cash. Oftentimes what happens after volatility spikes, the market regains its composure, people enter into the market, and the first thing they enter into are high-grade municipal credits, such as Eastern bonds. On the graph on the right, you could see that shortly or taking place right after the COVID-19 volatility spikes, the market returned and ultimately hit historic lows there in August. Rates today continue to trend downward, and you know, uncertainty has somewhat gone away and stabilized the market, and the economy is quickly recovering. Short-term rates also experienced similar volatility, and you could see there was volatility spikes in the Great Recession and then also during COVID-19. When the money returned back to the market, as I mentioned, rates stabilized, the Federal Reserve took actions The graph on the right shows that downward trend and rates today continue to remain low. The median rate since January of 2020 has hovered right around 44 basis points. Going back to 1993, the median rate was about 1.58%. So even with the volatility spikes, short-term interest rates have averaged very low. Now, the district has done a great job utilizing variable rate debt to diversify its portfolio and save on interest expense over the last 20 years. Now, over the last 10 years, the district has made some strategic moves in lessening the variable rate debt portion of its portfolio, going from 38% unhedged variable rate debt in 2010 to 15% last year, following the refunding of a significant portion of our variable rate debt. As you may recall, last year we priced a 2020 A bonds, which fixed out several series of variable rate debt as a de-risking move. The remaining variable rate debt remains manageable, and the district has capacity to issue variable rate debt in the future, such as a rising interest rate environment. And the variable rate debt that the district has in its portfolio serves as a natural hedge against low interest returns on our investment portfolio. Now, the remaining variable rate debt that the district has comes from the 2018 bonds. The 2018 A bonds have a four-year liquidity support that expires next year. So there's really nothing to do with those today. They're operating as designed, very low interest is what we're paying on them. Really no decisions need to be made currently for those. For the Bs and Cs, that's what we're here today to discuss. Those have the three-year mandatory tender, as John mentioned, for October 1st. And with that comes a six-month call beginning April 1st. What we've done is we wanted to target earlier in that window to take advantage of low rates and also to make sure we didn't run into any supply issues later down the road with this year. And timing is great right now. You know, rates are low. There's strong demand. And so really we started on this, you know, several months ago in preparation for the optional call date. The 2018 Bs are based off of LIBOR, and then the 2018 Cs are based off of SIFMA. These were chosen back in 2018 for diversity and index exposure. It was a safe way to allocate the two series of bonds against different indexes. So if there was volatility in one, it wouldn't necessarily directly impact the other. The district has one outstanding swap agreement integrated with the 2018 B bonds. It matures in 2030, and the last swap the district had, which was integrated with the 2018 C bonds, matured last year in July 2020. This graph or this chart just shows a summary of how the swap works. Essentially, the district pays the counterparty, Wells Fargo, 3.10% and receives 66% of one-month LIBOR. Then the district also pays 70% of one-month LIBOR plus a spread to the investors. The net effect is the district paying fixed 3.10% and then the basis differential between what we receive and what we pay, resulting in approximately 3.44%. This is what's known as a synthetic fix, and this is when we summarize our debt portfolio. We have the unhedged variable rate debt, which isn't fixed, and then we have the synthetic fixed rate debt, and then we also have just our traditional fixed rate debt. Now, as we communicated in the plan of finance earlier this year, LIBOR, it was announced that LIBOR would be going away at the end of this year. And what we communicated to the board was that cessation date had been moved to mid-2023, providing issuers a few more years to, you know, figure out and decide what they're going to do with it. One of the initiatives that we set during the plan of finance was to address this, proactively look at the options available, and in doing so, unwinding the swap would essentially take care of a portion of the LIBOR exposure that we have. Approved by the board last year during the 2020A fixed rate bond item was unwinding the swap. The district financing team has looked at the swap unwind economics regularly over the course of the last year. Last year when we fixed the bonds, at that time, it didn't make sense to unwind the swap. The costs were a little bit too high, and so we ended up leaving the swap as is. But now, you know, over the last several months, the economics have returned in our favor to essentially provide present value savings. And as we prepared and looked at the options we had to address the mandatory tenders coming up this year, we looked at the 2018 Bs, and fixing them out makes the most sense right now, and incorporating the swap unwind as a part of that. Unwinding the swap provides many districts many benefits to the district. Includes eliminating several forms of risk: counterparty risk with Wells Fargo, basis risk with the LIBOR spreads that we pay and receive, and then also interest rate risk of just the general market. And then also, as I mentioned, unwinding the swap would address the LIBOR exposure component, and then also the Bs are also based off of LIBOR. Unwinding the swap is market dependent, and if the terms of unwinding the swap became uneconomic at the time of pricing, we plan to price these as SIFMA-based floating rate notes, similar to what we already have, and separate from, you know, any additional LIBOR exposure. In the event the swap is unwound and the bonds financing does not close, we have provisions in place where the swap would be reinstated. Our bond counsel, financial advisor, district staff worked on incorporating this language to ensure that we had a safeguard in case anything happened. The risk is very low. The district's never had a financing that did not close. When we surveyed the financing team on if they've ever had a financing not close, just a couple occasions came up, and it had to do with litigation, last-minute litigation, related to that specific agency. As I mentioned, the risk is low, but if something did happen, we have provisions in place to where we're not, assuming any unnecessary risk. And then for the 2018 C bonds planned, which will be the Series 2021 Bs, we looked at all the options available, and short-term rates continue to reset very low. What's being recommended is another three-year SIFMA-based variable rate debt, which will provide us with additional or consistent savings on debt expense, and then also hedge against low interest returns that we're receiving. And then, as I mentioned, if the 2021A bonds, fixing those out and unwinding the swap doesn't make sense, we'll incorporate it into this, and they'll both be SIFMA-based FRNs. Just looking at the bond sale overview, true interest cost for the 2021A bonds, which is the second column, that's the fixed rate bonds. TIC is estimated at 0.788%. For the Bs, which will be the SIFMA-based FRNs, that's estimated at 1.40%. As I mentioned, the median rate is much lower than that. What we did here, though, is take a 20-year average of SIFMA to take a conservative approach as far as long-term debt service. We felt it wasn't accurate, or we didn't want to just show short-term debt expense and incorporate that into a very low TIC. We really want to take a conservative approach and show, you know, long-term what that debt service could be. Swap termination for the 2021A bonds, was estimated at $7.6 million. We took a look at the numbers yesterday, and it's fallen about $120,000 less. So it's right around $1.5 now. Final maturity hasn't changed. They're the same as the bonds that were being refunded. 2030 maturity for the 2021A bonds, and then 2046 for the Bs. And then with that, John will go through debt service, the schedule, and then the team. And then myself, John, and the rest of the team will be available for questions.
Thank you, Thomas.
So I got three more slides. I'll quickly try my best to get through. As Thomas mentioned, as we have reduced our variable rate exposure and focused on fixing out our debt service, we have focused on ensuring payments are level, and this shows the 30-year projection of our debt service. You can see that there are no large spikes which would ultimately impact rates or our reserves. With this refunding, debt service is not expected to materially change over the next 30 years, as these are not new money bond issues. The green bar, and just sort of pointing out, the green bar represents the 2021 refunding. You can see in 2025 the large principal payments, which is for the 21As, which mature on 2030. And then starting in 2040, you see the increase related to the 21Bs. So in summary, the plan is to refund the 2018Bs that have the swap agreement that are on LIBOR, to fix those out, and to unwind all or a portion of the swap agreement with Wells Fargo. And as Thomas mentioned, this is really market dependent, which we will know in 2 weeks. For the 2018 Cs, we will refund those as SIFMA-based FRNs with a 3-year mandatory call date. We do have a great financing team. In addition to myself and Laura Nomura and Thomas Hayes, we have bond counsel here today, and that is Brian Forbath with Stradling. We also have our municipal advisor, Darren Hodge, with PFM, and our underwriter for this transaction is Morgan Stanley, and we have Dan Kurtz and Esther Berg, who I believe is on the phone. So this is the schedule. Assuming today's approval by the board, we will post the preliminary official statement next week. Pricing will be the first week in June. We will price the 2021As first, and that is the fixed rate. Depending on market, those will either be confirmed that day or we will be in the market the second day. And then in the second day, June 3rd, the 21Bs pricing. And then bond closing is just a week later. So with that, staff recommendation is adopt a resolution that would authorize the issuance of new refunding revenue bonds in the amount not to exceed $120 million, and authorize the swap termination payment, approve all related financing documents, and authorize management to execute all related documents. And as Thomas said or mentioned, the financing team is here to answer any questions by the board. So with that, that's my presentation.
Very good. Do any members of the board have any questions on this? Thomas, I had one. I like to always ask this on behalf of the ratepayers. After we have all the fees and expenses associated with this transaction out of the way, we are still saving money for our ratepayers, correct?
Correct, yes. The money saved, and what this does is provides the district with flexibility and capacity in future debt issuance for infrastructure funding for capital projects.
Okay. Always like to get that on the record.
Oh, yes. Yeah, with the swap unwind, yeah. Currently, $1.5 million present value savings. And unwinding the swap essentially takes what we would pay them over the next 10 years, takes that risk away, takes that payments away, and incorporates it into favorable financing terms today.
Yeah, but just to be clear, all the fees that are associated with this transaction,
yes,
do not add up more than
correct
what we're saving. That was the point I was trying to get on the record. Okay.
Yes, we would still realize savings.
Yeah, yes.
That's correct.
Now, I just wanted to compliment staff and the team for actively managing the debt portfolio and taking advantage of these opportunities and just eliminating the risk that, that's there, the ability to do that. You know, market conditions change and you enter into the best, you know, vehicle at the time when you issue bonds and things change and you have opportunities. And I think it's wonderful that you're doing this. And so congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd move staff's recommendation.
We have a motion by Director Corona.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. And again, I'd like to thank the entire team. Great presentation. Thank you for that. With that, let's move on to item 5B, which is to set a time and place for, and I'm going to be thrilled to say these words, infrastructure availability. Formally referred to a standby public hearing to initiate legal proceedings necessary to establish the water infrastructure availability assessments and sewer and waste infrastructure availability charges for fiscal year 2021-2022.
President Pauly, I have asked our NAPI manager, Mr. Mark Salcido, to cover the infrastructure availability item this morning.
All right, Mark.
Thank you.
The floor is yours.
Great, thank you. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. So I'd like to just provide you with a brief update on this item this morning. Per the board's feedback and interest in this item, most notable is the proposed change from the term standby to infrastructure availability charge. This year's property tax bill will utilize the proposed term EMWD infrastructure availability charge in lieu of the EMWD standby combined charge to provide the public with more clarity and to help reduce confusion. Notification letters will be sent out or mailed out to our property owners whose charges increase due to expansion of water or sewer infrastructure near their property. We are also implementing a new system this year to reduce our system maintenance and anticipate increased public interest due to the higher volume of expected mailings. Additionally, we are working with Public and Governmental Affairs to update the infrastructure availability wording for the frequently asked questions posted on our website to coincide with these new mailings to our property owners. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
No, I just want to thank staff for being able to change the wording on this. I think it is much clearer for the people paying their property taxes that it really is infrastructure that they're paying for. So I am thrilled to see these changes. And if there's no other questions from board members, I will take the privilege of making the motion on this.
Thank you.
Second.
And second by Director Record. If you could call the roll, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And it passes on a vote of 5-0. With that, let's go to our informational items. And we have an informational item on our conservation program updates. Is that correct?
Yes, President Pauly, and this will be a team effort by several of our staff members. We will go ahead and have Dan Carney kick us off, and Dan will be assisted by John Worth and April Cody.
All right, very good. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, board members, and staff. As Joe said, I'm here. We're going to do a team effort in this presentation this morning about our conservation programs. I will start off by talking about non-functional turf replacement activities we've had here at the district and with John Worth, who will talk about recycled water projects in particular. My projects are primarily potable water projects. And then we'll hand it off to April to talk about some of the district's outreach efforts and public information efforts on these programs. Over the last 7 years, the district programs have replaced about 10 million square feet of non-functional turf throughout the district. Primarily, we'll be talking about the non-single-family residential today, which is about 60% of that amount, with the balance being single-family residential. This has been possible by a tremendous collaboration among parties with major investments by Metropolitan Water District, the Bureau of Reclamation, Department of Water Resources, SAPA, and all the member agencies, as well as the retail agencies of the district and staff. This really tells the story of drought and drought response over that period of time, starting in 2014 through 2017. About 9 million of the 10 million square feet were replaced in conjunction with Metropolitan's 400-plus million public outreach effort and rebates and tremendous amount of press related to the drought. As when the governor announced an end to the drought in 2017, by that time the funds for Metropolitan had been expended for the drought efforts, and we saw a tremendous slowdown in projects to replace turf, not just here at the district, but throughout the state. And since that time, since 2018, those rebates have started to come back. We've gone from $1 a square foot, to $2, and now $3 a square foot starting this last year. And so that, of course, has been an effort to kind of rekindle the interest in replacing non-functional turf throughout the district. And in addition to the financial rebates, we've also added some incentives, again, focusing on CII, non-residential accounts, that we think is a comprehensive approach. We have contracts with consultants to go out and do site visits for very large schools, homeowner associations, so forth, and provide comprehensive reports. We have consultants who do landscape architecture, so we have design services for those customers if they would like to take care of advantage of that at no cost, as well as, in addition to Metropolitan's rebates, internally here, staff has developed some very easy-to-use additional incentive programs for smart controllers, retrofit to drip irrigation, and high-efficiency equipment for those customers. And over the last couple of years, we've been able to replace about 355,000 square feet of non-functional turf, primarily, exclusively, that number includes non-single-family residential. Conservation staff has also been coordinating very carefully and closely with staff from the Accelerated Retrofit Program, the Recycled Water Program. This shows locations of a large majority, about 5 million square feet, of those turf replacements over that period of time, and you can see that the majority of it has been kind of in the central part of our district in Menifee, Murrieta, Hemet, with very good distributions as well in the north and south in the Temecula area, as well as up in Moreno Valley and Paris areas. At this point, I would like to hand it over to John Wirth to talk about recycled water.
Thank you, Dan. President Pauly, members of the board, I'm excited to talk about the recycled water program and some of the efforts that we're doing. First, the Accelerated Retrofit Program was kind of born out of the drought in 2015 and specifically the governor's mandate for mandatory conservation. The Accelerated Retrofit Program was developed to help assist existing customers to retrofit from potable to recycled water. It includes three primary components. We provide, from district staff and district consultants, technical design and permitting support to assist. District staff also provides installation of new recycled water services and abandonment of the potable services. And then directly to the customer, we provide up to $5,000 per acre foot reimbursement to pay for the cost of the on-site retrofit over to recycled water. In August of 2015, the board appropriated $2.2 million to move forward with phase one. The target was 400 acre feet to be done within a year. We were able to complete almost 470 acre feet within that time frame. We leveraged the Metropolitan rebates through the on-site retrofit program of $975 per acre foot to assist with that. And the customers, once they retrofitted over to recycled water, they would pay a special ARP rate, and that rate is lower than recycled but higher than potable. And so the delta between the special ARP rate and the recycled water rate is what reimburses the district for the investment that we've made. In September 2017, the board was pretty happy with the program, so they appropriated another $2.5 million to move forward with phase two. This time the target was 460 acre feet, but instead we also included a focus on conversion of non-functional turf. with phase two. So today I want to just highlight a couple projects that were a part of phase two. The first is the lakes at Hemet West. This is a 55-plus community that's on the Fruitvale zone in Hemet. They have about 700 units, a nine-hole executive golf course, over 7 acres of aesthetic lakes, and the entire site is currently served from a single potable water meter. They wanted to participate in phase one, but it's a pretty complicated project. We didn't think we could get it done in a year, so we moved them on to phase two. But the irrigation system that they had installed was over 50 years old, very inefficient. And through the work with the owners and their consultants, we ended up installing a brand new system, complete with a weather station and state-of-the-art efficiency measures. We had to remove a significant amount of turf, primarily around the boundary of the golf course, from a regulatory compliance perspective in order to avoid overspray on the residences. And they kind of used that to help realign the playability of the course in addition with the new irrigation system. But ultimately, we were able to convert over 360,000 square feet of non-functional turf. So the retrofit project itself is complete. We are currently working with Caltrans on the encroachment permit. We have to cross Highway 74, and we're almost ready to go out to bid for that. So we anticipate hopefully to be done before March 2022, but that's the long-term end date. But this graph here really is what tells the big story for the project. Prior to the project, they're using over 250 acre-feet of potable water. When we're done, total water usage is reduced significantly, and the potable water component is down to 80 acre-feet per year. So, the next project is the Lowe's Regional Distribution Center in Paris. If you've ever driven down the Ramon Expressway, you've certainly seen the large swaths of non-functional turf streetscape. One of the things we learned about during this project was that since the management that makes the decisions is located in North Carolina, the issues that they see with water is different than what we see with water. It took a little bit of work to get them on board, but ultimately they did, and they did a great job. They removed 220,000 square feet of that streetscape. We also leveraged the MWD WaterSmart turfs that paid for a good majority of the cost for this project. And when they're done, they are done, their estimated usage will be reduced on the entire site down by 40%, and the remaining usage is all recycled water. In regards to new connections, in 2015, in conjunction with the responses to the drought, one of the things that we did was we changed the admin code for new recycled water connections to apply the same criteria and requirements in terms of conservation and non-functional turf that we have on potable water to new recycled water connections. And what this graph kind of illustrates is the effect of that on the new connections. So the purple line is the number of new connections since our ARP started. Well, I'm sorry, since tracking this information. And our average usage per meter was at a peak of 13 acre-feet per connection. Over time, that has significantly been reduced, and some of it is because we're getting more connections, more streetscapes, maybe some smaller, but also a large part of that is because we're focused on removal of non-functional turf in the design. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dan, and I'll be back for one more slide.
Staff has identified another approximately 4 million square feet of commercial turf throughout the district. The majority of about half is located up in the Moreno Valley area. Turns out that's where most of our landscape is located overall. Some of the areas, such as Menifee and Hemet, where we previously had done a large part of the available non-functional turf, we've retrofitted it, has a little bit less, but there's still a good distribution throughout the district where we're in active communication with the schools and owners of those properties. In particular, these projects are in progress at some phase. Some of them, like Cherry Hills and Pegasus, are actually in construction. Many of this is part of the Moreno Valley Unified School District. We're working with staff sort of in the planning phase. They actually are very enthusiastic in Moreno Valley and want to do more turf than they had previously imagined. So we're very, very hopeful that that will result in some significant turf removal in those areas as well. I will now pass it back to John to talk about a very exciting project.
All right, so the Mount San Jacinto campus in San Jacinto is kind of a unique site. It is an EMWD customer, but the irrigation is primarily served from their own groundwater well on site. So they don't necessarily qualify for some of the standard rebates from Metropolitan or ARP funding from EMWD. But we've been working with staff for the last about a year and a half and very detailed record search for as-builts and then site surveys, and we've actually put together with staff's input, with college staff's input, a recycled water retrofit plan along with a turf conversion plan. It is not cheap. The cost is about $1.5 million to complete it, but it would ultimately reduce about 17.5 acres of turf or 760,000 square feet of non-functional turf. The current water usage on the site is about 110 acre feet, and with that, we'd be able to reduce that down about 40 acre feet a year. We're working on funding options. As I mentioned, it doesn't qualify for our current funding programs. However, one of the alternatives that we are investigating is the groundwater in lieu program, and there's hopefully to be more to follow on that. But with that, I will turn it over to April.
Oh, you'd have so many guests this morning. So for the next slide, we wanted to give you some context for the outreach that has been occurring during all of these different programs over the years. Obviously, through the drought process from 2014 to 2016, that is what we were concentrated on, mainly with the top water users in our CII market, as well as those that were over water budget in our residential market. We also worked with new developers to hand out materials to homeowners as they were purchasing homes, since we changed the water budget factor for those new homes so that they wouldn't be caught off guard. When the drought ended, we transitioned into a more permanent lifestyle type messaging where it was just to stay water wise and keep up some of those good practices. But we did also work with conservation on some of the new campaigns that came out, like the No New Turf for CII customers, the agricultural irrigation pilot project, and obviously when we transferred CII customers to water budgets, there was a significant outreach to do that for them. Recently, obviously with COVID, our messaging very much centered on the water safety and reliability factor. However, now that we've transitioned into another critically dry period, our messaging is now focusing on the infrastructure investments that we've made and how that has prepared us to sustain through this period. We're also working with our regional partners on a combined message that will address that for our customers as a region, so that when they hear all of these drought declarations, particularly up north in central California, they understand where we are as a region and the investments that have been made to help us sustain that. With that, I'll turn it back over to Dan.
In an effort to accelerate the non-functional turf replacement programs, staff has been looking at some additional ideas that might be fruitful. One is looking at the possibility of recycled water sites actually having water budgets similar to potable water sites and looking at the feasibility of doing that. Another idea is looking at the water budgets themselves for potable sites that still have non-functional turf. These are non-residential. And maybe reducing the allowable water quotient, in this case ET value, going down to 0.5, it's currently at 0.7, as a way of encouraging customers to take the leap and replace some of that non-functional turf that's still out there. So these are just ideas that we're looking at assessing at the moment. For next steps, we are certainly going to advance all of the current programs that we have available. We have prepared an expanded conservation program for really focusing on single-family residential customers, where there's a tremendous amount of work we can do in terms of water efficiency. Certainly continue all of our partnerships with SAPA member agencies as well as our retail agencies, and continue to look for grants and other kinds of funding opportunities out there that would help us finance these efforts. And with that, that concludes our presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions.
So President Paul, if I can add maybe a couple of things, and great presentation, Dan, John, and April. When we presented this item at Planning Committee, one of the feedbacks we got was that as we look at potential recycled water budgets using ET, one of the considerations should be the salinity of the water, and perhaps considering that when we establish a water budget. So I think that was a great feedback we got from committee, and we'll definitely take that in consideration as we look at the recycled water budgets. The other thing I was going to mention as well, in addition to coming back in July to update the board on the residential outdoor water use efficiency program, we're also going to be coming back very soon to talk about our accelerated retrofit program proposed next phase, which will be phase three. John and his team has been looking at the next round of retrofit sites throughout the district. So we'd like to bring that forward to the board for consideration, as well as provide you an update. As John mentioned, this is a financing program, or partly a financing program. So we've had really good success in paying back the district the investments we've made under phase one. So we'll go ahead and provide a comprehensive update soon on the accelerated retrofit program. Just wanted to add that. With that, the team will be happy to answer any questions.
Director Armstrong, you had a question?
So you show these clusters of in the different communities of areas to target. I was just curious if that is developed around where there's like recycled water backbone facilities, or would those require line extensions, or how does that happen?
Thank you. Those sites that are shown in the clusters on the maps do not include recycled water conversion sites.
Oh.
Those are all potable water
okay.
sites. Yes, I'm
okay.
Sorry, I could have clarified that more. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm happy to address how they were selected if that would be useful.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
It was really first come, first serve. There was no requirement for any of these homeowner associations or
okay.
you know, schools or cities who are primary participants to participate. We just very actively reached out and built, you know, kind of working relationships with them, and
okay.
and so it was really on their schedule that we were able to complete those projects.
Well, for example, then the lakes in Hemet, that's including recycled water conversion, right? So is that so? My question is like, is that around facilities that exist, or are there line extensions, and who pays for that?
And I'll turn that over to John.
Sure. So currently there is an existing recycled water pipeline just on the other side of Highway 74. So the district is going to be extending that to provide service to both the lakes of Hemet West. There's also an opportunity for retrofit with the city of Hemet for streetscape, and then there's also some future development that we could serve.
Okay. And then just one other question. I think the Mount San Jacinto College campus conversion looks great, and it just seems like it's a real opportunity to create a palette there that could influence future homeowners on what the paradigm is for, you know, landscape out here. Are we working with the college on the design, or?
Yes, the entire process was hand-in-hand with college staff, maintenance staff, as well as all the way up to Dr. Schultz, I believe. And so in developing the design for specifically landscape conversion, for turf conversion, we got input on what areas they wanted to maintain turf, what areas they wanted for functional, and then what kind of a plant palette that they wanted, both in terms of the perimeter and then also where students congregate and things of that nature. So everything that was prepared was prepared directly with their input. It may need a little bit refinement if we go out to bid with it, but it gave us a really good idea of what they're looking for and what it would cost.
I would add on that item in particular. Director Record raised this issue or concern over this campus a couple of years ago. So Bonnie Wright and I met with Dr. Schultz on this particular issue, and he was very enthusiastic about trying to convert that campus to non-functional or take care of the non-functional turf and go water-wise California-type plantings. So we've got a lot of momentum as long as he's in that capacity, and we're going to be very creative with how we might fund this type of a project, maybe a demonstration garden, work in conjunction with college staff, educational opportunities about California water-wise landscaping, et cetera. And then John had alluded to maybe acquisition of their groundwater rights or alternatively in-lieu program where they agree not to pump groundwater. So we're looking at, staff's looking at all the different options that we might be able to bring forward for consideration.
Great. Thanks.
Any other questions, comments? I always want to point out when we discuss this, if it wasn't for the leadership of Director Record on this board, we would not be at this stage. But I'm glad we are, and I got a briefing the other day, a little preview on some of our retrofit, and I'm quite excited about what I'm hearing on, especially in my division of getting some of the green belts and some of the remaining schools on recycled water program. So I'm looking forward to that presentation. With that, why don't we take about a 10-minute break? All right, if we could reconvene ourselves here. We'll move on to item number 7 on our agenda, which is to receive and file several committee reports and other reports. I'll look for a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Director Record, move the item. Second by Director Slauson. Would you call the roll, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. That will bring us to our calendar review and director attendance reports. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. The board has received a save the date notice for the WRCOG General Assembly. This year is the 30th anniversary, and it will be a virtual celebration of resilience to be held on Thursday, June 24th at 4 p.m.
I'll certainly attend.
Thank you, Director Pauly.
I'll attend.
Thank you, Director Slauson. Moving to page 2, we have the master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Beginning with tomorrow, May 20th at 7:30 a.m., the district will be presenting to the Rotary Club of Paris, and Director Armstrong is scheduled to attend. The Board Executive Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. for Directors Pauly and Record. The SEBOBA coordination meeting will be held virtually tomorrow at 10 a.m. for Directors Pauly and Record.
And I'm able to do that here, correct?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. The joint committee meeting with Western Municipal Water District is also scheduled for tomorrow. That's at 2:30 p.m. for Directors Pauly and Slauson. On Friday, May 21st, Director Corona has been invited to participate in the Temecula Student of the Year Scholarship Breakfast at 8 a.m., on Monday, May 24th at noon, Director Armstrong has an update meeting with the general manager in Paris. On Monday, the 24th at 4 p.m., the Hemet-San Jacinto Water Master meeting will be held, and Director Pauly is scheduled to participate. On Tuesday, May 25th, the Metropolitan Water District committee meetings are scheduled, Director Record's calendar. And on the 25th as well, Director Corona has an update meeting with the general manager at 7:30 a.m. in Temecula. And at 8 a.m., we have the kickoff meeting for the Pension Liability Ad Hoc Committee here at the district, and that begins at 8 a.m. with Directors Pauly and Armstrong. On Wednesday, May 26th at 7 a.m., Director Slauson has a Moreno Valley Chamber of Commerce meeting. And on the 26th at 4 p.m., the Paris Menifee Student of the Year recognition ceremony will be held, and Director Armstrong is scheduled to participate. Thursday, May 27th, we have the Board's Operations and Engineering Committee meeting at 3:30 p.m. And also at 3:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 27th, WRCOG will be holding meeting 5 of the EDC Steering Committee, and that's for Director Polly's calendar. Tuesday, June 1st at 9:30 a.m., the SAPA Commission will meet, Director Slauson's calendar. And on Tuesday, June 1st at 2 p.m., the Rancho California Water District Ad Hoc Committee meeting will be held for Directors Corona and Record. On page 3 of your calendar review, we have the upcoming board meetings and committee meetings, which are on schedule. And on page 4, we have the joint interagency meetings for the next 3 months and the district holiday schedules. Are there any additions or questions on the calendar?
Thank you.
I could ask a question on the June 24th, WRCOG.
Yes.
That's the same day we have option engineering at 3:30?
Yes.
I wonder if Director Armstrong or anyone has an objection to moving that up an hour, 2 hours, or the 24th?
We'll get that.
If it works with everybody else.
Absolutely. We'll work on rescheduling that, Director Slauson. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. We will go to Director's Activities Report. Start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. Well, I had the opportunity to attend the first Cal-DSAL board meeting, and not a lot to report there other than there were some project updates, and one of those was with South Coast Water and their Doheny Desal project, which is going through the environmental review right now. And, you know, it's desal, and it's on the ocean, it's 5 MGD, but they're still looking for partners. And I didn't know if Eastern ever evaluated participating in desal or not. And I know we looked at it at Rancho and talked to them a lot, and it's kind of an interesting project. So I don't know, Joe, if you guys have looked at that. And
We'll take a look at it, Director Armstrong, but to my knowledge, we have not looked at that partnership opportunity in the past, given that we have our own desalination facilities.
Yeah, and it's not like you would get the water, but it would be transfers and things. It's just, you know, part of the portfolio. I don't know. But anyways, I thought it was a great meeting and organization. They had the day before a speaker from the National Alliance for Water Innovation. I know some of the staff was on that too, but I thought it was great. They have a real focus on one of their areas of focus is intensified brine management that I know is really of interest to Eastern. So I think it's a good organization. I appreciate the opportunity, President Pauly, to participate in that.
Thank you.
I also attended Aqua Conference. It was a virtual conference, and the first day was a bit of a bust. They had real technical difficulties with the platform that they were using and the host for the virtual conference. Got started late, and they had to end it after lunch because they had a catastrophic server issue or whatever at the platform host. So that was a bit of a problem. But on that day, I did get to see Charles Conaru's presentation on COVID effects and what Eastern has done and how we've helped some of the programs we have to help disadvantaged communities and customers. And he did a great job, very professional, well-spoken, and just real good representation of Eastern. So I thought he did a fantastic job. They did get it back in order on Thursday, and I did really enjoy a presentation by Metropolitan. I'm sure, Director Record, you're very familiar with it, but to me, I learned a lot about the regional recycled water program, you know, potentially 170,000 acre feet a year, and just where that water is going to go and how it's going to be used from recharging groundwater basins to going into a treatment plant and just where those facilities are. It was really a good presentation, learned a lot, so that water is going to cost approximately $1,800 an acre foot. So it's a little bit more, but you know those lines are going to cross at some point between potable and some of these other initiatives. So I thought that's a really good program. And then I also am on the finance committee, and for Aqua, we met and reviewed budget and investments. But also Aqua has a dues deposit program that they're looking at renewing or not, and I talked to Laura about it. And so I'll be supporting renewal of that program. Those are my updates.
All right. Thank you so much. Director Corona.
Okay. Yeah, at the Rancho meeting last week, kind of uneventful. They really only had one real action item, and that was congratulations to the staff for all the work that they've been doing during COVID, and another kind of a re-explanation of the latest in the state guidelines on COVID.
Very good. Thank you. I had two meetings. I had a briefing on the French Valley Recycled Water Retrofit Program. And, Joe, thank you again. Excellent briefing. Looks like we are going to be able to move some of the legacy schools and legacy greenbelt areas that were not on the recycled system originally in the next year or so onto recycled, which I'm very excited about. And then I had my monthly update with the general manager, and we went over a lot of future items here at Eastern. Always appreciate the time, Joe. Director Record?
Joint Inland and Orange County Caucus on May 6th is just a review of the Met agenda. Good participation, good meetings, all virtual. Special board meeting May 7th and 8th for Metropolitan. That was in person for the first time. It was downtown L.A., opportunity to interview candidates for the GM position. So that's a Friday and Saturday. Two long days. And then came back the next Monday and Tuesday with standing committee and board meetings. You have a written report on that, nothing out of the ordinary for those meetings. And then for Eastern, the monthly update with general manager, the first of many, and always good. So we're off to a good start.
Very good. Director Slauson.
Yes, I had two meetings. One was with our new general manager, and that was it's always entertaining. I shouldn't say entertaining. How about enlightening? And the other meeting was with SAPA. That was yesterday. We had updates on the Southern California Salinity Coalition, and I was impressed with everything that that coalition does. We're looking to expand the number of participants, members, and a discussion, an update on the disadvantaged communities, outreach, and grant funding to provide technical assistance to those small water companies that don't have the technical expertise for running a district or grant writing, et cetera. So that's it.
Very good. Do we have any directors that want to make some closing comments or future agenda items? Seeing none, Mr. Legal Counsel, I understand we have a couple closed session items.
That's correct, Mr. President. As identified in item 10A and B, 10A is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, one item of potential litigation. And 10B is same code section concerning existing litigation, San Diego County Water Authority versus Metropolitan.
And I think for the first time in a year, we can actually adjourn to the closed session room. So we will do so. Report out of closed session for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. A discussion was had by the board. No formal action was taken. Also, the board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss existing litigation, San Diego County Water Authority versus Metropolitan Water District. A discussion was had by the board. No formal action was taken in that regard. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. And with that, we will stand adjourned until 9 a.m. Wednesday, June 2nd.
Thank you.